Blog Talk Radio.
I said, friend, let me get that for you, as he rolled his wheelchair toward the door of the restaurant I was going in. I helped the old fella through the door. I could see that his hat said he served in World War II. I shook his hand and said, friend, let me buy dinner for you. He said, son, I wish everyone felt like you do. I watched a tear roll from his eyes. He said, grace. And as he sat there and he talked to God, my heart was in my throat. As I heard him ask, we'd all find a better way. And he said, if we keep on going the way we're going, we're headed for hell on a fast train, not knowing how we got there or how we're gonna come back. They've taken the U right out of the USA and broke the right arm off of the Statue of Liberty, put out the torch that lights our way. Then they say that it's all politically correct. Help us stand up now, God, or there won't be no America left. He said, son, for God and country, I lost my legs on Omaha Beach. But that's nothing compared to what thousands lost if we continue being free. Once again he said, well, if we keep on going the way we're going, we're headed for hell on a fast train, not knowing how we got there or how we're gonna come back. They're stomping and burning our stars and stripes, not giving a damn for the sacrifice of life that protects that very right. Yet they say it's just the way that they protest. Help us stand up now, God, or there won't be no America left. America lives. America.
Welcome to the Disrespected Trucker Radio Show with your host, Jeremy Johnson, and your co-host, Chris Bikerson. Tonight, we have one hell of a show lined up for you guys. We're going to talk about the Georgia trucker who got himself involved in a traffic incident down in West Virginia that is now charged with second-degree murder. And we're also going to talk about the walkout today in Ohio against the mandate. And we're going to also talk about the 100-plus shipping containers as of Monday sitting off the coast of California and the regulations and legislation that is directly affecting that and what the California Trucking Association is saying about it. But I appreciate you guys joining the show tonight, and welcome to the Disrespected Trucker Radio Show. And I am your host, Jeremy Johnson, and my friend and co-host, Bikerson, how you doing tonight, brother?
You know, the bastards ain't killed me yet, Jeremy.
Well, they ain't trying hard enough.
They ain't trying hard enough. I don't think they can find me.
You know, I called Chris, about an hour and a half ago. I was on my way up I-35, and I got about, 40 miles away from where I was planning on stopping to get fuel, and my fuel light had come on earlier than that. But when I looked down and when I called Chris, I said, you know, Chris, might be a bad night. My fuel gauge is reading empty, and I still have a few miles to go here to get to the fuel stop. And when I got there, I made it. It didn't run out of fuel, but I ended up putting in 200 gallons and cost me $700. So, I mean, I was getting low.
I would have been nice, too. I would have started the show without you and been like, you know, I'm sorry. I'm sitting in for your regular host because he's a dumbass and ran out of gas.
Exactly. Well, hell, let's move on to it, man. Let's talk about everything that we have to talk about. Let's start it off. Before I start, the phone number is 516. Write this down, folks. 516-387-1733. Call that number. If you want to get on the air and share your opinion, your thoughts about the subject we're talking about, press that one button on your phone, and that will cue us up when you call in to let us know that you want to get on air and discuss what your opinion is. And we'll gladly put you on air, even if you disagree with us. That's the best part about it. Again, that phone number is 516-387-1733. And when you get connected, press the number one, and we'll see that you want to talk, and one of us will get on and ask you what your name is. Moving on. So there was a truck driver from Georgia. His name is James Armstrong. He's 66 years old, about 150 pounds, right around there. He was charged with second-degree murder on October 7th down in West Virginia. From WSAZ, the Williamson Police Criminal Complaint states 66-year-old James Armstrong fired a shot at, I believe, 51-year-old Eric Bennett Sammons during a confrontation after Sammons walked to the driver's side of the tractor trailer, visibly angry at Armstrong. Court records state that Sammons, the aggressor, blocked the tractor trailer at an intersection of two highways with his car. Armstrong's attorney, Jeffrey Simpkins, believes there is evidence to prove his client is not guilty. He said, and I quote, "My client never opened the door," Simpkins said. "There are witnesses to that effect, that Sammons, the aggressor, was making threatening comments the whole time as he was proceeding back toward the semi. Sammons proceeded to open the door. He was getting physical, going to have a physical altercation, at which time my client justifiably fired a shot. Sammons, who was shot in the chest, was pronounced dead at the scene." Williamson Police Chief Grady Dotson said Armstrong, who was from Georgia, would be charged with second-degree murder. Typically, any type of scenario that involves trying to get another police or another vehicle to stop, rather, especially on a U.S. interstate or anything like that, is never a good idea, Dotson said. It's always good to just to digress and to take a deep breath and think about the situation before you act on it. Simpkins said Armstrong immediately notified authorities after the shooting. As soon as he shot him, he called 911 and said, "Listen, I just shot somebody. I had no intent to shoot the guy, but I had no choice. I had to protect myself," Simpkins said. Armstrong is being held at Southwestern Regional Jail in Holden, where his bond was set at $200,000 cash. I have read an update story to this. He has since posted bond, and he is out with no conditions as we speak now today. But this brings up the argument of conceal and carry in a CDL vehicle, and the argument of what is considered justifiable a defense to a homicide. There's a million questions that come out of this, and obviously, you know, we don't have all the details. We weren't witnesses. We base our judgments based off of what we read in the news. So I'll share my opinion with you, and this is just my opinion. I'm no lawyer. I'm just a truck driver talking on a radio show. If I was in that position and I carried my gun and a guy come up and opened my door and was being threatening and was blocking me in traffic where I had nowhere to run. And he was starting to be physical with me or trying to drag me out of my truck. I probably would unload one in his chest also. Not to sound mean or, you know, nobody knows what they would do in a situation like that until you're in a situation like that. And it's an unfortunate incident because a man lost his life. I do believe that I read that this guy that lost his life, he was 51 years old, weighed anywhere between 240 and 250 is what the estimate was. And the man that shot him was 66, and he weighed roughly 150 pounds. So, you know, obviously the 66-year-old, you can consider that retirement age, elderly, I guess, and he felt threatened by this man, according to the statements by his attorney, and unfortunately somebody lost their life. What do you think about this story, Chris?
Well, I tell you, I really can't state my opinion right now, and I'm going to tell you why I can't render an opinion. I don't have enough information, and the media is notoriously famous for this. The media, of course, they make money off of controversy. They make money off of people taking sides and fighting with each other in the comments of the articles they post to social media and on their websites, etc. And so what they do, and this is by no mistake, it's a deliberate omission. They will give just a skeleton of detail that leaves it open to, if you're a pro-gun type of person, you're probably going to immediately side with the person who fired in self-defense, even based off of little information, because your natural inclination is that you're going to align yourself with that pro-gun, pro-self-defense mentality. On the opposite side of the spectrum, the anti-gunners, the people who don't believe in self-defense, we should all just, wait for the cops to come and pick our corpse up off the side of the road. Those people, with not enough details, will automatically jump to the side of the guy who shot is wrong. And so here you've got two sides that are going to be firmly entrenched in each other, fighting back and forth about a story that, in all honesty, you don't have enough information to make any kind of judgment. And that's why we have courtrooms where all relevant information can be presented to a jury. And then, of course, you know, a lot of times you'll see outrage when the jury gives a verdict that goes against what so many people believe, because the jury, unlike the people out here in internet land, the jury actually had all the information.
Right.
The people who are just reading the articles, they only have just enough limited information to pick a side. And of course, human nature, once you pick a side and start defending it, you know, it would pretty much take an act of God to get someone to back off of their position and say, well, now that I have more information, I can see where I was wrong. And I believe this now. Most people just don't do that. Once they render a judgment, they're not going to go back on that. So a lot of factors to consider. This is an area I'm well-versed in when it comes to self-defense because of some of my history. When you consider a life or death situation between two individuals, three, four, five, however many, what it ultimately comes down to is relatively simple. Did the person who used deadly force in defense of themselves or someone else have an articulatable, reasonable belief that they were in grave danger at the time they used deadly force, whether that's shooting someone, stabbing someone, whatever the method is? And there's a lot of factors that the courts give weight to that. One of those factors is, in fact, age. If you look on the law books in most states, a lot of them have enhanced penalties for any type of violent offense against someone above the age of 65, because the prevailing thought there is that, you know, the body begins a certain physical declining, you know, once you hit a certain age. And as you get above the age of 65, you know, the bones become more brittle, various other physical impairments that would make it that you're just not as able to withstand a violent trauma injury at the age of 67 or 72 as you were when you were 30, 40, 50 years old. So actually gets looked at as kind of part of a justification. You know, the older and more frail you are, the more reasonable it becomes to use deadly force in a physical encounter where you're being assaulted. And so then you have other factors too. They look at things like size, for example. You were saying this guy was 150 pounds being attacked by a 240, 250 pound man, you know, and he was younger. What if he was 51, so we're talking like 16 years younger. So now you're talking about a size factor. It's not just the age factor, the frailty. You've also got the factor of, okay, this person is much bigger and much more overpowering. As far as threats, well, what kind of threats? Was he just saying, I'm going to smack you? Was he threatening, I'm going to kill you? Was he being graphically threatened? Was he yelling things very specific, like, I'm going to drag you out of that driver's seat and stomp your skull into the pavement? What were the was issued? What exactly was the threat? Was it a believable threat? Is it something that would convince a normal, reasonable person that this was a deadly threat and one that a normal, reasonable person would believe the aggressor to be capable of carrying out? So we don't know those things. They say he didn't open the door. I'm curious, though, if someone has chased you down, blocked you in, and is advancing towards your truck, did the door lock not work? Was he just not thinking of locking the door? What's the situation? How did the door come to be in the open position? You know, that's another detail we don't have. Furthermore, right. What type of medical condition might our shooter have that we don't know about? You know, did he have some sort of medical condition that makes him, is he on some medication that gives him, you know, a blood thinner? And if, you
yeah,
know,
it's all about the details.
The danger of internal bleeding. I mean, the details are everything in these cases. So we don't have enough information. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to render a judgment one way
right.
or another. And it's just kind of, that's where I have to stick with it.
Well, and listen, if you're listening right now to the show and you want to throw your opinion in or your thoughts on this matter, dial in at 516-387-1733 and press the number 1, cue the number 1, and that will pop up on our switchboard that says you want to get on and share your opinion about this matter. Like Chris said, it's a very touchy subject. We don't have all the information. We don't have the witness statements. We don't have the police reports, obviously. So we're going off of what we read in the news, and we all know that everything that you read in the news is bits and pieces of what the real story is. And I've always said there's three sides to every story. There's your side of the story, there's my side of the story, and then there's the truth. And that's where you find the truth is somewhere in the middle there. And, yeah, it's a bad deal because somebody lost their life because of a moment of anger. You know, who knows what happened to that gentleman earlier in the day that got shot. You know, maybe his dog got ran over by a car. Maybe he lost his job. There's so many variables that you just don't know what another person is going through in their life that sometimes you just lock your door, call the police, say, man, I got a crazy guy trying to, you know, bang down my truck. Police are going to show up. if there's any damage to your vehicle, they're going to arrest the guy for the damage and you'll get reimbursed. That's why we carry insurance. You know, so there's another aspect to look at it, another way to look at it. I'm not saying that the guy was right for shooting him. I'm not saying he was wrong for shooting him. I'm just saying, like Chris said, we don't have all the information, and it's very, very unfortunate that somebody had to lose their life over it. So, but, you know, that kind of brings me to earlier in the week I was reading about the Chicago mayor basically dehumanizing the police department or the police officers in Chicago that refused to get the jab. She went as far as saying that they are spreading misinformation and they are going to plan an insurrection. dude, I mean, come on. I've noticed something as of late, that when you go against the narrative from some of these far-left Democrats, and I'm not going to say all of them, but for some of them, especially in the leadership, but I'm not talking those that support the left. I'm talking about the leadership roles. When you go against their narrative, they're very quick to use the media and their bullshit tactics against you and call you a domestic terrorist, like they did the parents at the PTA meeting standing up against mask mandates for their children. But what irritates me, Chris, is that these police officers are literally policing one of the toughest cities in the world. They have murders every weekend in, you know, sometimes 40, 50, 60, 70 murders a weekend that they're dealing with. And how tough is their job have to be when they basically are, they tie their hands behind their back and say, now go out there and keep our streets safe, by the Democratic leadership in Chicago. And I'm talking about Mayor Lightfoot. And Mayor Lightfoot, in my opinion, she has no business being anywhere in public service, anywhere near public service, especially the head of a police department. And when you're trying to keep your citizens safe and you're telling your police department to, you know, back down from certain situations because that's racist, I'm sorry, but the police officers, when they start their shift, I guarantee you they're not going out and saying, you know what, I hope a black guy commits a crime tonight so I can shoot him. I guarantee you that's not what's being said or thought. It's an unfortunate statistic in the city of Chicago that a good majority of those violent crimes are committed by the black population. That is a statistic that you can look up, and that is true. I'm certainly not – I don't want to come off as – oh, yes, here we go. Another white guy talking about black people problems. Well, it's not like that. I go off of what statistics tell me. And
well,
sometimes the truth sucks.
Yeah, that's not even a true – that's a stereotyped fallacy right there.
Mm-hmm.
I can speak on that. It's not like only white people have a problem with Lori Lightfoot. I remember early on in the pandemic when they started ordering everybody to stay at home and people were still out in the streets, you know, how dare they walk outside of their homes. Lori held a press conference and she got on the TV camera, talked all tough, looked really stern. I mean, it was very Hitlerish. Prior to 2020, we really weren't accustomed to our elected officials staring at us through the TV screens and yelling at us their orders. That was a very new thing in 2020. And that's what she was doing and talking about the importance of staying home. And then she said, all right, I got to go deal with something. And she turned around and she walked. There was a basketball court in a little park, city park, behind her where there were some local kids. And not to make it an issue, but just to point out that it's not just white people having an issue with her. All of the kids that were playing in this park were black, and she walked down there surrounded by her minions and the TV cameras following her. And I'll never forget. I cheer this kid on. I love it. She walked over there and she said, "All y'all need to go home. Get out of here. Park's closed. Go on home," or something to that effect. I'm not getting it verbatim. But after she made her little statement, she turned around and, you know, started prancing away. And as she was walking away, I'm sure the cameras didn't mean to pick this up, but one of the kids on the basketball court just looked straight at her. He says, "We live here. You take your ass home." I thought that was hilarious and great, great for him having the balls to do that. But yeah.
Well, just point out the hypocrisy, Chris. She was just spotted at a basketball game just last weekend. I think it was the women's basketball won the championship. I believe that's what it was. Either way, she was at an event. She walks in, and the cameras are on her, and she's smiling, and she's waving, and she's da-da-da-da-da. She makes me ill, by the way. As you look around, everybody else has got masks on, and they have a mask mandate at these events. But not Mayor Lightfoot. She can do whatever she wants because she's above the law, like a lot of these politicians and leadership roles, mayors and governors think they are above the law. They can tell you what to do, but they don't have to follow the same rules, orders, and regulations. So there's a big middle finger to Lori Lightfoot. I think she's a puke. I think they I wish somebody would remove her from office because she's a tyrant. I just wanted to point out that hypocrisy. You know what? I wholeheartedly support the police, the EMS, the fire departments, our military. They have jobs that we know nothing about. Just like they don't know nothing about trucking. But they have to deal with a whole set of different issues every day. These police departments are dealing with the worst of society. Is there a few bad ones scattered in there that have dealt with the worst of society too long probably take stuff a little overboard? Yeah, there is, and I think you're going to get that in every industry because, after all, human beings are human beings, and nobody's perfect. But I wholeheartedly support the police, and I feel bad that their hands are tied in most situations now with this whole defund the police and, you know, the police are evil. And it's really just a mess. But
it is a mess.
No, I wanted to. Yeah, go ahead, Chris.
I was just going to say, I'm all for backing the police when they're doing the right thing. Chicago, the city of Chicago is like its own case study. That city is truly unique in its corruption, things that are socially accepted there, just a lot of things. And I'm going to tell you, the Chicago Police Department, and I know a lot of people from the Chicago Police Department, most of them are good people. There are definitely some bad apples. There's definitely instances of the Chicago Police Department doing things that are not by the book and are not constitutionally acceptable. But then again, when you understand some of the constraints that they work with, the lack of help they get from prosecutors, judges, media, city officials, you kind of begin to understand why they have the us versus them mentality that they do, because when it comes to the issues that they deal with on the street, it really is they have each other, and that's all they have. They don't have the social backing. They don't have the network behind them to support the tough job that they do. That gets abused sometimes. That there's definitely some pretty violent Chicago cops out there. I will tell you that in certain areas and in certain districts, certain units, they are a street gang in every sense of the word. There is a lot of corruption at the lower levels of the Chicago Police Department and the upper levels. There's corruption within the city government itself. So it's to just say I support the police and everything they do, I can't go there. You know, there's a lot of people out there that they're there to serve and protect their paycheck and pension. And that's right. About it. And so I don't put on the Blue Lives Matter cheerleading outfit. by any stretch of the
imagination. No, I don't go as far as that.
But at
either.
The same time, I feel for what they're going through right now and what they're dealing with, because their job right now is asinine. I can't believe they have anybody left working, to be honest. I can't believe they haven't all just flown a big middle finger and walked off the job by now and sold their house and moved to the suburbs. But they haven't. There's still a lot of them there, but they're working on getting those numbers down. I think that is the plan, though, is to make the job of policing so incredibly hostile, not just from the street level, but from the administrative levels, the police administrations and the courts working against them. I think the job is to get them to walk off the job in droves, to create a crisis where, of course, the only solution is going to be some sort of federal police force. That's a theory of mine.
And I think that's what they're aiming at. The Biden administration with Nancy Pelosi already said that they wanted to put agencies down in Florida. I believe three separate headquarters down in Florida. And forgive me for not remembering what those agencies were, having something to do with FEMA, basically. But, you know, back to this whole Lightfoot thing, you know, the reason she came out and said that publicly is because over half of her police force in Chicago said that they would not take that mandate and that they would quit or retire. And in response to that message, she came out and said that anybody that chooses an early retirement will not, over these mandates, will not be receiving their pension. And if that doesn't compare to a time in history of, let's just say it, Nazi Germany, I don't know what will.
Yeah.
I don't know what will wake people up to get them to understand that these people that are in office, half of them that are in office, I'm not so sure that they are legitimately in office at this point. I can't believe that a majority of the population would vote to put these kind of dictators in office and just follow and hang on their nutsack, basically, and follow every word that they say. It's surprising to me, you know. And speaking of mandates, you know, how many people, nurses, healthcare workers, that are striking all over the country that mainstream media is not covering? Look at the airlines last week. Southwest Airlines walked out, had a call-in sick day. United Airlines, what other airline was it? I think it was United Airlines, the ones. Delta, was that the one that backed off of their mandates? Okay, yeah, they're telling Joe Biden administration, we will not enforce that mandate. Today in Ohio, over 750 contractors for GE, General Electric, walked off the job and went on strike against these vaccine mandates. And that's not being heavily covered by mainstream media either. And gotta bring you to, or lead you to ask the questions, why is mainstream media so scared to cover this, scared to cover these people going on strike or going against the narrative or the mandate? And I think you and I could probably educate our audience just a little bit. They don't want you to know what the truth really is, what the real, like some of these doctors are saying about this vaccine mandate and the vaccine itself, what some of these politicians are saying. Governor DeSantis down in Florida today, he had a press conference, and there was a gentleman on there talking, and I don't know, I didn't get enough time to watch and see who that guy was, but they were talking about mask mandates for the children in the schools. And he was talking about one of the states saying that this is completely safe and it's all tested and everything's good and your kids need to wear your mask mandates. Oh, or their masks. But they don't have a test subject or a test population. They don't know if it's safe or not safe. I have seen stories where they've tested those masks, and the bacteria in those masks after wearing them for as long as they do is it's not good. And then
is building up and causing illnesses.
Yeah, exactly. And then that leads to what the governor of Colorado just said recently, that he told the kids to lie to your parents and go get the vaccine. A governor of a state told children to lie to your parents and go get the vaccine. At what
They're
time?
Awfully concerned.
When are we going to stop this madness? Yeah, when are we going to stop this madness? Honestly. Tell me, Chris.
Oh, boy. Okay, I'm just going to throw a prediction out here. I'm used to being called crazy, so I'm good with it.
Sweet.
There's, and I'll give the listeners here some things that they can look up themselves, even though Brian Stelter says that you should not do your own research by any means. You should just trust the media. But there's a little thing out there called the Cloward-Piven plan. Cloward and Piven were a couple of university professors back in the 1950s. They were followers of a man named Saul Alinsky. A lot of people don't know who Saul Alinsky is. You can Google that or duck it. It would be a better choice. And see for yourself. He was a prominent leader of the American Communist Party. And these professors who were followers of his devised a strategy for how a capitalist country could be forced into a communist country over time. And it's an 8-step plan. And just look up the Cloward-Piven plan, and I think you'll be surprised. You'll recognize a lot of what those strategies are. And I think what we're in right now, what we've been in for the last couple of, well, not couple of years, the last 18, 19 months, we're emerging from what's known as the destabilization phase. Now, it's been going on longer than that. The destabilization actually started taking roots a long time ago. It kind of picked up its intensity in 1990. But the final stage, stabilization, kicked in 2020, in the spring of 2020, and they're pushing this mass division. And the plan here is to pit your different segments of society against each other and to build up so much polarization, so much divisiveness, that you get them to the point that they are literally wanting to kill each other and actually killing each other. And we've seen that. Just go and look on some of the comments you see right now on vaccinated versus unvaccinated debates online, and you will see there's literally people wishing death on each other for their position on this polarizing issue. So we're there. They've created that division. They've got everyone divided up, labeled into their categories, know what they'll fight each other over. And they're pushing it over and over and over. They're going to push that division. And then what's going to happen next is eventually there's a reason they're pushing that division. They need it. They need it to accomplish the next objective. The next objective being it's not that they're stupid and don't realize they're going to start a civil war. They know damn good and well they're going to start a civil war. They need to start a civil war, and they're doing everything in their power to push it along and get it ignited. I think, frankly, they've had to do a lot of brainstorming, because I honestly believe they thought by now we would be in a full-blown civil war, and they're surprised that we aren't. But once that civil war starts, we've already seen how that's going to get spun. They're going to label anyone who is standing up for the Constitution, all your pro-Constitution patriots, anyone who stands up against the government doing tyrannical things, they are going to be immediately labeled as right-wing extremist, domestic terrorist, neo-Nazis, racist, etc. And we're starting to see the early signs that there's going to be some split amongst military and law enforcement as to who's going to side with the patriots and who's going to side with the tyrants. And once that split starts occurring, once they start losing a certain percentage of their military and law enforcement assets that are no longer willing to be the armed enforcement, well, they're going to be labeled as rogue forces, rebel forces. And when the violence gets real, and when I say real, I'm not talking about two people getting shot, three people getting shot at a riot in Kenosha. I'm talking when people start lining up with arms and the bullets are getting exchanged between forces. We start getting real body counts. That's when everything's real. That's when we're actually in an honest-to-God civil war. And once that happens, it is my belief that the administration is then going to run to the UN, and they are going to plead for help in dealing with the uprising of domestic terrorism in the U.S. The UN's going to approve it. Ones that are going to be on the planes and the ships to come over here are going to be troops from Russia and China. And Canada's going to give them the foothold they need to enter the U.S.
Well, they've already come out with that narrative by labeling people that stand up against they call it misinformation of the vaccines or the COVID-19 measures in place. Anybody that stands up against that are now labeled domestic terrorists. Anybody that celebrates a holiday, a religious holiday, is going to be labeled a domestic terrorist. They put the narrative out there to condition you to what's to come. They do this all the time.
Right.
We just are starting to catch on to it. Yeah.
Yeah, they're priming people, and they're getting them groomed, you know, for, hey, these types of people are bad people. And they're planting that seed. And then as soon as they get the violent reaction that they are pushing to get from somebody, they're all ready for that. They got the finger pointed at them already, and they're like, there you go. This is how dangerous these domestic terrorists are. And that's how it's going to work.
Yeah. And they'll use the media to push that propaganda, and then that's when the real hell is going to start. And I agree with you, Chris. I really do.
Yeah, no, it's going to get much worse before it gets better. I mean, you have to ask yourself. A lot of people, whenever I throw that out there, are like, I don't think it's going to get that bad. And then I tell them, I'm like, okay, do you see either side backing down? Well, no. Do you have any reason to believe that one side is happy with where things are now? Or do you think they're going to keep pushing in the same direction they've been pushing? Well, no, I think they're going to keep pushing. Okay. So let's talk about this. Both people have their feet planted firmly in the ground. They aren't budging. They're both on their sides. They're going to keep pushing, and it's getting to the point where we're no longer theoretically starving people. We're now literally being businesses by government decree. We are now literally making families go bankrupt. We are now literally starting to draw the lines of who can work and who cannot work. And revolutions happen, and it was a history professor where I went to school, and he made one simple statement that's true, and this is about as simple as you can sum things up. Revolutions happen when people are starving, and that's what they're doing. They're disrupting the supply chain deliberately. They're taking away jobs deliberately. They're crippling the workforce deliberately. They're literally, if there was a textbook definition of how to destroy an economy, what we're living right now would be the textbook definition of how to destroy an economy. And it's being done systematically and deliberately. You cannot mess an economy up this bad unless it's on purpose.
Not in this short period of time.
Yeah. Which I believe it is on purpose. And again, that's also the economic collapse is a part of the Clawwood Piven plan to force a capitalist nation into a communist nation. Look it up. Just look at it. Anybody out there, just if you're confused, if you're not sure how to make sense of the things that are happening today, look up the Clawwood Piven plan. And once you see those 8 steps, it will hit you like a ton of bricks. Oh, my God, that's everything that's happening right now.
Yep. I've actually read that myself. And people call me a nut job. Well, I kind of am. But, hey, that's beside the point.
You kind of are, but.
Oh, you know, there's so much going on in this country in 10 short months this administration's been in office. And they always blame, they're always finger-pointing. One thing has to do because of this or that. Or, you know, and I read a report today that Biden came out and said that unemployment is up. They've gained 60% of people are off unemployment. That's how many jobs they gained, the most jobs that America's ever gained. And I can't believe that people still buy that shit. I mean, honestly. I mean, of course you're gaining jobs. People are going back to work, you moron. After you quit giving them $300 extra a week.
You know, every Democrat governor and every Democrat mayor across the country shuttered the businesses in their state, destroying jobs in massive numbers never seen. And now all of a sudden they say, okay, everybody can go back to work now. Oh, my God, look how many jobs we created.
Yeah, they create a problem, and then when people are allowed to go back to work, they fix the problem that, oh, it was Trump that created this. Oh, was it? Because
right.
I'm pretty sure Trump was pretty encouraging on not shutting down everything. He didn't want to shut down everything, but he did not have power over the states for the states
right.
to shut down everything. And guess what happened? Every blue state shut everything down.
I think he did.
And
I think he did have the power to get involved and stop that, but he didn't do it.
Oh, did he? Okay. I could be wrong. I've been wrong once before. Once.
That's just my personal belief. I think that, and this is why, you know, Trump and his administration are suspect in my book too, because I'm suspect of everybody, pretty much. But it is my thorough belief that not only were these governors violating people's constitutional rights by decree without lawful authority, they were also doing things that were having horrible impact on interstate commerce. Everything they were doing with these closures of factories and everything else was impacting interstate commerce to the tune of billions of dollars. It's not trillion. There was absolutely, in my belief, the authority for Trump and the Department of Justice to step in and say, hey, Governor Whitmer, just one example, you are committing human rights violations. You are violating people's constitutional rights. You are acting in violation of state and federal law. And this is your warning, knock it off or we're going to charge you. That never happened.
Yeah.
And I firmly believe Trump had the ability to do that and he didn't.
And you and I have had conversations about Trump and, you know, my transformation of what my beliefs were a year and a half or 2 years ago to where they are today. And when I've said, you know, there's so many questions that I have, a lot had to do with certain things that Trump said or did, or why didn't he do this or why didn't he do that, you know, drain the swamp, but yet it seemed like the swamp was pretty deep. And he put in people into play like Elaine Chao for the head of the DOT.
Right.
I mean, she is the swamp, you know, and
like I said,
I don't know. There's,
I said a lot of times he drained the swamp, but he just replaced it with swamp water.
Yeah, and you and I had a conversation about, well, we question things, which everybody should question things. just because you agree with Trump or some of his policies, don't be blinded by the fact that you agree with most of his policies. Still ask the questions. Hey, okay, I do agree with him. I like the guy. You know, if that's what your opinion is, great. But why does he do this? Why did he do that? Same with Biden. You know, if you like Biden, if you support Biden, don't stop asking questions. Well, why is he doing that then? You know, why did he do that? And dig into it a little bit. Don't just, oh, I like the guy, so he's just telling me the truth. Because my opinion is all these son of bitches are lying to us, every one of them, some way or another. It's to keep the status quo in their favor, to make the money. I mean, we got over 50 congresspeople right now that have a net worth of over $10 million.
Right.
And over 50 congresspeople right now have stock in Pfizer and Johnson & Johnson. Well, boy, of course you're going to push the vaccine mandate when your stock goes
right.
from $62 a share to $253 a share in less than a year. I mean, holy shit,
right.
how much money are you making?
Because
you
those
know?
Vaccines,
so,
and here's where you got to understand, those vaccines are not free. Johnson & Johnson and Pfizer and Moderna, they are not donating those vaccines. No.
They're charging the taxpayers.
The government is paying for those, and of course, by the government payers are
mm-hmm.
paying for those. And of course, we're seeing now there's going to be increases in taxes as we move forward. Apparently now they're going to be tracking, you know, what are we down to? $600. All the rich people that have more than $600 in their bank account are going to be getting their individual transactions monitored. And so they're taking that money,
Chris,
from you. Yeah.
They're going to hire 80,000 IRS agents to monitor Americans' bank accounts for any transaction over $600. That's incoming, outgoing. $600. You
going to
go pay your rent for $700? You're going to go buy
your car payment, your anything. They're going to take your money that they forced you to give them, and they are going to take that money that they took from you, and they are going to invest it in hiring more pirates, okay, to go out and take more money from you. And part of what that's going to do is it's going to pay for all these things that the government is mandating, like vaccinations. And while the stock in the companies who benefit from these mandates goes up, guess who's making money off of that? Oh, yeah, Congress. The people that are voting the legislation in that makes their stock price go up, they are the insiders who are insider trading with your damn money. They are taking
exactly.
your money and gaming the system to make themselves incredibly wealthy while they bankrupt your family, while they take your job away from you, and while they pile you with more mandates and, oh, by the way, introduce a little bit of hyperinflation so that we can lower the cost of debt service to these big corporations who will actually benefit from the hyperinflation while killing off even more middle-class-owned small businesses.
You know what, Chris? We've been discussing many things. We got a caller that wants to talk right now. His name is Shortstack. Let's bring that guy on. Let's see what his opinion is. How about that?
Warning! Warning! Bullshitter alert! Bullshitter alert! Warning! Warning! Bullshitter alert! Bullshitter alert! Warning! Bullshitter alert!
Shortstack, you're on the air. What's happening?
Not too much. Finally got my truck back tonight. But I was sitting there listening to that part where you guys were just talking about with the IRS and everything like that. And I watched a very good interview today of some of our politicians at a press conference that they were doing. And they were saying that whether it's $600 or $10,000, they're wanting to get in on us, on our bank accounts. And there's the studies that the Democrats themselves did to see if this is worth trying to push through. Their own numbers are actually showing that 75% of the money that's going to be found where people are cheating the government that the IRS is going to be able to reclaim that we should be paying in taxes is coming from those making $100,000 a year or less. The billionaires and millionaires, with the way the tax code is written right now, they're not hiding shit. They're paying what they have to pay based on the tax code written today. And the ones that they're going to find that are cheating, 75% of that amount of money coming in is going to come from those $100,000 or less. That's me. That's you. That's all of us that are probably listening to this radio show tonight.
Right. They're going to make sure you pay taxes on selling your car.
They're after us. Well, it's to the point where
it's an attack on middle class.
Well, it's to the point now that if my parents wanted me to fly somewhere and I didn't have the money to fly, they send me the money to fly that flight, try to say I have to pay taxes on that if it's over $600 because somebody gave me more than $600, so I'm going to have to pay taxes on that money just to get on a plane that my parents are sending the money to buy it in my name.
Let me just say this. If you folks that are listening to this program don't start telling your family and your friends to start standing up against these tyrants, the middle class in America that you knew, the freedoms that you love, it's over with. And here's the song.
Almost over.
Remember how many people died for this country.
And I do want to say one other thing, too. If there by any chance, for some unknown reason, that anybody from the organization or the corporation of the In-N-Out Burger ever listens to this episode, thank you for not being part of the tyranny of the vaccination police.
Oh, I just seen that story in San Francisco. They shut down an In-N-Out Burger because they would not go along with the In-N-Out Burger in San Francisco said, we will not tell people that they have to show us proof of vaccination to enter our business. So the government come in, and what did they do? They shut them down. What does that sound like? Hey, welcome to Nazi Germany. I'm your host, Jeremy Johnson. Yeah, come on, guys, wake up.
That is nationalizing businesses to do the government's duty.
There's something schooly around here.
That's what that is.
That's what the biggest argument from the left is, well, these are private businesses and they can make that decision, but they're doing it because they're being ordered to by government, and that makes it illegal. When you take an order from the government to impose something on people that the government cannot constitutionally order, you are then acting as what's known as an agent of the government. And so when you are acting as an agent of the government, executing something the government ordered you to do against people, essentially you become like the government yourself, because you are not doing that of your own free will. It's not like every business in the country suddenly decided, you know, I think we should discriminate against our customers based upon their medical preferences. They didn't decide that on their own. They were told to discriminate against people for those medical decisions. And that is not lawful. At that point, that is not a private business making a decision on its own. And that can be clearly demonstrated by the fact that when a business chooses not to go along with that plan, they get shut down.
I mean, a prime example, if I owned a business and somebody walked into my door and I asked them if they had HIV, and if they said yes, I'd be like, no, sorry, I won't serve you because I don't want you in my building. Because, granted, they have a disease that is deadly, that is transferable. I'd be thrown inside of a courtroom so darn fast and thrown with so many stinking unethical, or thrown against so many different charges of discrimination and racism, it's not even funny. But if I don't ask them for a vaccine card, what their medical is on a vaccine, now I'm in trouble for not asking? How is that possible? where does the government get the right to choose what we can pull and what we can't? I can understand asking someone how old they are for the sale of alcohol or tobacco, which I don't agree with the age, but they can ask for the alcohol or tobacco. Okay, that's a federal law that we have to ask that we have federal laws saying you cannot consume or buy this product under the age of such
that
and such
was voted
age.
On. That was voted
on by Congress by law. But
hey, why don't I have to show a vaccine that I've been vaccinated by smallpox or the Spanish flu or any of that, any of the vaccines that I got when I was a child? Why don't I have to show proof of that when I go into a restaurant or a bar now? Aren't they worried about that? I mean, really. I mean, if I didn't have that, is everybody going to catch it? Well, no, because they've been vaccinated against it. Well, then why are they so worried about this? If people have been vaccinated against COVID-19, they shouldn't have to worry about somebody that isn't vaccinated because they're vaccinated, right? Oh, that's because it went from a 99% success rate. And you know why it was 99%? Because they didn't have enough studies done yet. So, of course, it was 99%. But guess what? Or 99%. But guess what now? You know what the percentage rate of effectiveness these vaccines are in some of them? Down to 40, less than 40%. So get the fuck out of here with these vaccine mandates and show them your proof. You know what?
Well,
no, we're not in Nazi Germany, and I'm not doing it.
Well, and the other thing, too, is this vaccine is not a vaccine. It's a antiviral shot based on one virus, one strain, one variant of a virus. We do not have a vaccine for a Delta virus. Delta variant. We don't have a vaccine for Alpha, Beta, Delta, Leo, whatever the other ones are out there. We only have a
vaccine. I think it's called Daniel Kors.
For the Wuhan variant. That's the only vaccine, and that's just an antiviral shot, just like they make antiviral shots for different variants of the HIV virus.
Don't you just love how they call it a vaccine? And
it's not.
It completely goes against the very definition of what a vaccine is defined as. Like,
no,
completely against.
Webster changed that. Webster changed that in the last year and a half so that it would include this.
Yep.
Oh, did they? Oh, that's convenient.
It was either,
that's how, that's
it was either Webster or Wikipedia.
I
one of them changed the definition.
Yeah, well, if you look up the original meaning of a vaccine, it's to be eradicated from the virus or the disease that you're being vaccinated against. That disease should be eradicated. That's the original version of it. And now, oh, by the way, I'm a domestic terrorist, just so you guys know, because I questioned the CDC. By the way, that is in current legislation that they're trying to pass through this infrastructure bill, that if you question the CDC and the quote-unquote, expert scientists, the very scientists that are being funded by the government, if you question them and the CDC, you will be labeled a domestic terrorist, and you will be charged as such. Charged as such. What do you think of that?
One other thing. If there's any listeners out here that have the ability to print T-shirts, I wear a 2X tall. So if you want to make it in a T-shirt or a long-sleeve T-shirt, 2XLT, I would like a T-shirt in orange with black lettering that says Proud Domestic Terrorist. Send it to Jeremy, and I'll make sure you get your money when it gets back to me.
Oh, there we go.
Because I wanted to get one, and the I-80 truck stop. The I-80 truck stop wouldn't make me one of those shirts because it had the word terrorist in it. I don't know why.
Political correctness? I don't know.
Yeah, well, I'm sitting here at the Pilot in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and so that I don't lose my shit tonight, I'm going to jump off here and go across the street to a coffee shop and sit back and have a couple cups of coffee and enjoy some nice entertainment.
You fucking crazy, man. You sound insane. Do you realize that? You should be medicated.
Catch you later, Daniel.
See you. Bye.
All right, Short Stack.
That was Short Stack. He's a friend of ours, and he's a good man. He's we always have interesting conversations with that guy.
Right.
Hey, let's take a quick break. If you don't mind, Chris, let's take about a three and a half minute break. I don't know. Let me just get my mind back to what we're going to talk about next. And, yeah, I think we got
your mind back.
A lot to talk about.
This could be a long break.
Well, I just we get into the vaccine passports and mandates and our freedoms being stripped from us, and I get a little heated, and I got to do my goose rabba and just breathe and then get back at it like I should, because this next subject we've been talking about for the last couple of weeks, but it just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger, so I think there's a lot to talk about on that. So let's take a 3 minute and 54 second break, and we will be back at you guys in 3 minutes, 54 seconds. Go take a potty break. Go grab a beer.
There
go grab
go.
A soda. Go grab the popcorn. And we will see you in 3 minutes and 54 seconds.
Yeah, Breaker 1-9, and this here is the Rubber Duck. You got a copy on me, Pigpen. Come on. Yeah, 10-4, Pigpen, for sure, by golly, it's clean clear to Flagtown, come on. Yeah, it's a big 10-4 there, Pigpen, yeah, we've definitely got a front door, good buddy, mercy sakes alive, looks like we got us a convoy.
It was the dark of the moon on the 6th of June, and a Kenworth pulling logs, cab over Pete with a reefer on, and a Jimmy hauling hogs. We was headed for bear on I-10, about a mile out of Shaky Town. I said, Pigpen, this here's a rubber duck, and I'm about to put the hammer down.
Them hogs. 10-4, Roger, about 5 miles or so. 10, Roger, them hogs is getting intense up here.
By the time we got into Tulsa Town, we had 85 trucks in all. But there's a roadblock up on the Cloverleaf, and them bears is wall to wall. Yeah, them Smokies was thick as bugs on a bumper. They even had a bear in the air. I says, caught on all trucks, says, here's the duck. We're about to go a-hunting bear.
Negatory, Pigpen, you're still too close. Yeah, them hogs are starting to close up beside us. As mercy sakes, you better back off another 10.
Well, we rolled up Interstate 44 like a rocket sled on rails. We tore up all of her swindle sheets and left them setting on the scales. By the time we hit that Chi-Town, them bears is a-getting smart. They brought up some reinforcements from the Illinois National Guard. There was armored cars and tanks and jeeps and rigs of every size. Yeah, them chicken coops was full of bears and choppers filled the skies. But we shot the line and we went for broke with 1,000 screaming trucks and 11 long-haired friends of Jesus and a chartreuse microbus.
Yeah, Rubber Duck, this is Sodbuster. Come on, yeah, 10-4 Sodbuster. Listen, you want to put that microbus in behind that suicide jockey? Yeah, he's all of dynamite. He needs all the help he can get.
Well, we laid a strip for the Jersey Shore and prepared to cross the line. I could see the bridge was lined with bears, but I didn't have a doggone dime. I says, Pigpen, this here's a rubber duck. We just ain't gonna pay no toll. So we crashed the gate doing 98. I said, let them truckers roll. 10-4.
Off your tail. We'll catch you on the flip side. This here's...
stay tuned for more gross, stupid, and morally deficient funny stuff. Thank you.
Hey, hey, hey. Welcome back to the Disrespected Trucker Radio Show. And I'm your host, Jeremy Johnson. I got my co-host with me, Chris Mikerson. And we are ready to continue on with this madness that we call the Disrespected Trucker Radio Show. Sometimes I get a little heated. I get a little, my blood pressure goes up, and I start using the F-bomb, and then I know that's my cue. Say, all right, buddy, you need to take a three-minute break, collect your thoughts, calm down. Let's get back to the show. Let's get back to what's important.
Good thing it's internet
and,
radio.
oh, man. What is it? The Federal Communications, the FCC would, I'd be up in the Howard Stern fine class, I think, about after only five episodes. But,
right.
You know, Chris, me and you were talking earlier about the supply chain, and we've talked about this matter numerous times in the last few weeks about the shipping container ships being held off the coast of California. Well, it's not just California that they're being held off of. Galveston, Texas, the East Coast, whatever port that is over there. I do know Jacksonville, Florida is busier than hell. Savannah, Florida, Savannah, Georgia, busier than hell. Governor Ron DeSantis went as far as made a plea to the ships sitting out on the West Coast to cruise down to the Panama Canal and come up around, and they'd be happy to take those ships. And they're busy. What I read last was there are currently 100 container ships sitting off the coast of California with up to a 10-week wait. And, you know,
wow.
It's funny that, yeah, what I find funny, not ha-ha funny, but a little ironic is that one of the very few times that a cowardice president or vice president, Kamala Harris, actually says something was way before this crisis was known, where she said, you probably should go get your Christmas gifts early this year because there's going to be a shortage.
Right.
That was way before this news broke. And what did you say, Chris? They had a council back in June to study the shortage.
Yeah, the supply chain disruption. Let me tell you know, we're going to go into a time machine here in just a minute. But the way these ports work, and I want everybody to realize the impact of this, the economic impact that this is going to have. You understand this as an owner-operator yourself. Now, let's say you load up for a 1,000-mile. You know that you're going to get loaded. You're going to drive. You're going to deliver when you get there. It should be offloaded in a matter of 2, 3, 4 hours at the most. That's a two-day run, and you charge because there's a certain amount of money it costs you to operate that truck on a daily basis. And you know what that fixed amount of money is, and you know what the amount of money is for fuel and maintenance that you have to set back based upon the mileage you're driving. You charge based on the idea that that's a two-day load. Now, what would happen if you went, you picked up, and you went to that regular customer of yours, and all of a sudden, instead of getting offloaded in 2, 3 hours, all of a sudden you found yourself in this huge line of trucks that extended out into the next town to the point that they were like, yeah, we got to put you on a waiting list, and you should be offloaded within the next couple of weeks. Well, are you going to charge the same for loads going to that customer when you know you have to be sitting for 2 weeks instead of 2 hours? Of course not. Okay, of course not. These ships, these cargo ships, they're just like a tractor trailer in the sense of there is a certain amount of money that it costs to operate that ship on a daily basis with the crew and the maintenance and repair and operation of that ship, the fuel and everything else. There's a certain amount of revenue that they charge to each customer wanting to ship something on that ship. And they base a lot of that rate based upon, okay, it's going to take us 8 days to sail from this port to that port. And they're basing it on the fact that, okay, we're going to sit in that port getting offloaded for 2 to 3 days, maybe 4 days. And then we're going to be, you know, getting loaded with some return stuff, and we're going to sail back across. Well, now all of a sudden, instead of sitting there for 3 or 4 days in port, now all of a sudden they've got to drop anchor miles and miles out at sea and sit there and wait to get offloaded for weeks. Do you think they're going to charge the same for the next shipment going into the port? Hell no, they're not. They can't afford that. They're going to go bankrupt if they keep charging less money than what it costs to take those goods across. So the end result is going to be every damn ship that you have coming into these ports over here now, they are going to be charging a rate that is based upon the idea that they are going to be sitting at sea for 10 weeks waiting to get offloaded. That price is going to be astronomical. That price is also going to be reflected in
inflation.
The cost of those goods getting sent to the distribution centers. Those distribution centers, the wholesalers, when they send them off to the retailer, they're going to have to recover that cost. And guess who's going to be paying for it at the end? You.
The people, that are being monitored for spending $600, that's who is going to pay for it, those people.
All you rich bastards with $600.
That have over $600 in your bank account, yeah.
Yeah, so that's the economic impact. But now let me put you on a little time machine. You didn't know we had time machines on this show, did you? I'm the producer.
Yes, I did. I didn't want to let anybody know that, Chris, but hey, here we are. Let's talk
all
about
right.
The time machine that we have.
Time machine. We're going to go back in time right now to 2014. 2014, CARB. It's known as the California Air Review Board, I believe is what that stands for. I might be off on one of the words. Essentially, it's California's state version of the EPA. In 2014, they passed this massive emissions law into effect. And at that time, they said, okay, no trucks older than 2011 are allowed to operate in the state of California. It's 2014. No truck older than 3 years old. Now, for those that don't realize it, these commercial trucks, you know, most of these things are good for somewhere near 1 million miles before they need to be overhauled. These things have a shelf life that extends for several years. And they also put in some other regulations pertaining to it had to be a truck equipped with a diesel particulate filter system, diesel exhaust fluid, or DEF, as a lot of people refer to it. And immediately what happened? Over half of the trucks operating, over half of the commercial trucks operating in the U.S. at that time were suddenly ineligible to operate in the state of California. Now, you think that might
solve
the problem? And so a lot of trucking companies, they all of a sudden, and you might remember if you were in the market to buy a truck in 2015, shortly after that passed, you might remember the market got flooded. All these companies that were California-based that had trucks older than 2011, truckpaper.com, trucktrader.com, they were selling these things. They needed to get rid of them so that they could update their fleet to trucks that met this requirement. You could almost trade like a McDonald's combo meal for, you know, a four-year-old truck. Back in 2015. I mean, the price is really bottomed out. Everybody was out buying trucks back then. The people that had the money to do so. Because they just flooded the market. They were selling these things. A lot of trucking companies in California went bankrupt. They went belly up because all of a sudden their entire fleet was illegal to operate in California. And their entire operation was in California. So a lot of companies went bankrupt. A lot of trucking companies went bankrupt. and you literally had half the trucks in operation, no longer able to even drive in the state of California. Obviously, that caused a problem. A lot of the bigger trucking companies came in. They made some changes. They established yards just outside the California state line in states like Arizona, Nevada, Oregon, et cetera. And they basically would have their over-the-road trucks come in, bring a trailer, drop it off in that yard right outside of California with their older trucks that didn't meet California emissions. And then California trucks that did meet California emission standards, they operated strictly in the state of California. All they would do would be to jockey trailers back and forth between those yards and the customers so that it could be compliant. But that doesn't solve the problem. It's only the big companies that run drop and hook operations that were able to make that adjustment. And so,
but Chris, what happened then?
What's that? What happened then?
You know, the AB5 comes out.
Oh, we haven't even got to AB5 yet. So before that,
yeah, well,
before
okay,
AB5
I'm sorry, I get ahead of myself.
Out, oh, it's all right. You're jumping ahead. It's my time machine, damn it. All right. No. So,
okay, I'm sorry.
So then you have companies, you may have heard of them, companies like Amazon, Walmart, Home Depot, all your major retailers. They had a crystal ball. And they said, wow, you know, as freight demands increase over the next few years, and we've got all these goods coming from China that are really cheap, you know, and they're going to these ports in California, but California just made it that half the trucks out here can't even operate inside California. They said, you know what, this might be a problem in the future. Their crystal ball was so good. They actually, years ago, before Trump was even in office, went out and they started making alternate plans for other shipping routes that they would use and start making use of in the event that it was no longer economically viable to send their goods into California. And so they actually started building distribution centers, warehouses, in areas close to other ports like the Galveston, Houston, Texas area, et cetera. They changed their entire operations, built these multi-million dollar buildings and hired employees and everything years ago in anticipation that the California ports were going to be overwhelmed at some point in the future. So anyone who tries to act like this is a brand new problem, you're in the dark. The private market knew this was going to be an issue years ago and spent money to deal with it. And so you're seeing that now, and that's why these other ports are suddenly getting overwhelmed. Now, I haven't been in all of them. I can tell you Houston's a nightmare. I've been there, set for 12 hours in a line of trucks out in Houston. Galveston wasn't too bad last time I was there, but it's been about 3 weeks. So who knows what it's like now. I'm starting to hear that they're getting traffic. I know the ports of Savannah and Jacksonville, Florida, are getting overwhelmed. I've seen that in articles recently. Those ports were overwhelmed when business was slow. So I'm sure they're really messed up right now. I'm hearing, like, the ports of New York and New Jersey are starting to get overwhelmed. I haven't heard anything bad about the Port of Baltimore yet. That's the one I do the most business in, but I haven't been there for a couple of weeks. So this whole thing is taking place. It's nothing new. It's nothing shocking. But what is what's our transportation? What, you know, I'm not going to get to him yet. I'm getting ahead of myself. Like you mentioned, AB5, they came out with this law saying that, you know, these trucking companies who have contractors who own their own trucks and sign up to operate under their motor carrier authority, that they are violating law. Essentially, they're saying if you are an owner operator, you are a victim of yourself. You are victimizing yourself by being a business owner when you clearly should be a W-2 employee making someone else rich. And so they got all these owner-operator rules now that's knocked out a whole bunch of owner-operators from operating in California. And guess who moves a lot of shipping containers in California prior to AB5 finally getting the green light just a couple of months ago? Container junkies, right? Can jockeys, the guys who move the shipping containers. A lot of those guys are owner-operators. But now we know that they a lot of them can't go in there and do that anymore because they've been ordered to stop victimizing themselves by being business owners. So no coincidence that the timing of AB5 being given the green light by the Ninth Circus Court of Appeals and then the Supreme Court not wanting to hear it, no coincidence there. You time that, put it together, and all of a sudden we have this massive crisis that just it was operating on a hair trigger anyway. And then
hey, Chris,
that
let
was
me,
kind of the death.
Let me just interrupt real quick, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, Chris. You know that I don't like to interrupt you because you always got a lot of information. But I just want to remind everybody that's listening to the show, call in. And if you got an opinion on what we're talking about or you want to add to the discussion, we still have 33 minutes left of the show, and we would love to hear from you and start the conversation. Even if it's off subject, that's cool. We'll take that. But the phone number, and write this down, I'm going to give you 30 seconds, not 30, but maybe 3, to get a piece of pen or a piece of paper and a pen. A piece of pen and a paper. And there you go. The phone number is 516-387-1733. That is 516-387-1733. And when you get in and you get connected, just press the number one, and that will send a queue up to our switchboard that, hey, I want to talk. I got something to say. And even if you disagree with us or if you agree with us or
especially
any of that, as long as you're respectful. Yeah, come on. Come on to radio. Let's hear your point of view. That's how we all learn. 516-387-1733, and then press the number one. Okay, Chris, continue on, my friend. I'm intrigued by the conversation, and I'm enjoying listening to what you got to say.
All right. So here this crisis that's been unfolding over years finally has the straw that breaks the camel's back. When AB5 gets upheld by the Ninth Circus, that hits, all of a sudden, all these companies start moving away from owner-operators. It reduces capacity even further for moving containers out of the port. Now the backlog hits. That was the final nail. That has the backlog going, and it snowballs into what we have now. And where is our brand-new Secretary of Transportation? He is on what his second month of paternity leave, using, and I saw the picture, some sort of device that allows him to breastfeed the baby. And you can't make this shit up. You really can't. But he took a little bit of time off from breastfeeding his child to come out and say, you know, these shortages are going to continue as long as the unvaccinated continue to not get vaccinated. So
yeah,
here
like
we
that
have,
has something to do with the shortage.
Like
yeah,
that has
okay.
Some, yeah, like that has a damn thing to do with this problem that took years to develop. But he's going to point the finger and guy over there, that damn conservative that refuses to get a vaccine. Yeah, it's his fault. Oh, are your store shelves empty? It's their fault. It's them. Which
yeah.
is what I
that
was
conservative
earlier
guy
about,
that's been out here from the very beginning
driving.
Of this pandemic.
Yeah, they are just going to keep
driving
that division.
You know, it's the very people that have been out here driving since the very beginning of this pandemic that have been supplying this country with the frickin' toilet paper that they've been stripping off the shelves at a record number, actually having fistfights over. That is actually happening again, by the way. A Walmart in the town I'm from, of 13,000 people, all the toilet paper is gone. It's like,
are you serious?
Out of everything that you can, I'm not shitting you. Out of everything you can hoard, and you hear about shortage.
There?
Yeah, it's what the hell? Yeah, I'm not shitting it. Yeah, right. But it's like people, and the very people that are hoarding the toilet paper again this time are the ones that still have two rooms full of toilet paper from the last whatever the hell that was. Why? Why toilet paper? I don't get it.
You know
it.
What?
Like,
all I can figure out, some people are hoarding ammo and some people are hoarding toilet paper. I know what the guys with the ammo plan to do. Apparently, the others just plan to shit themselves. That's all I can think of.
Apparently, yeah. And I don't know. Maybe it's to cover up the wounds from the bullet holes. I don't know. But holy shit. You guys are hoarding toilet paper, and your freezers are empty. You can't afford food. But, hey, I have a whole spare bedroom stacked all the way to the ceiling full of toilet paper. I'm going to have the cleanest ass in town. Wow.
You
okay.
know, I feel
Good
sorry
for, you.
For the archaeologists of the future. At some point, we're all just going to boil over so bad with tensions. We're going to annihilate all of our civilizations with nuclear warheads. And archaeologists from the future are going to be sifting through the ruins, and they're going to be like, I don't know what happened. All these buildings were destroyed, and there was huge stacks of toilet paper in all of them. And they're just going to be so puzzled.
So I said this a while back, you know. Okay, so we all go number one and we all go number two, right? Okay. So you run out of toilet paper, okay? Worst case scenario, you run out of toilet paper. Now, these people that are hoarding toilet paper, do they think that, oh, my God, what am I going to do to wipe my butt? I'm going to have to walk around with a dirty ass? No. Here's your solution. You see that bathtub and shower sitting right next to you? Like literally right next to you? You can actually take your pants and underwear off and your socks and your shirt and whatever, and you can just step right on into that shower and turn your backside to that shower head and clean yourself off. Exactly. Yeah, is it exactly what we've envisioned for our future is to wipe our ass by taking a shower? But, hey, it is possible. Your life's not going to end if you run out of toilet paper. I was just telling my friend Tony this last week. I said, you know, Tony, when I go and get toilet paper, I usually wait till I see an ad or something when I'm home, and there's a special on if you buy one of the big-ass rolls of Charmin where it's got 82 rolls. I'll go and pick up two of them. And then guess what? I don't have to buy toilet paper for literally the rest of the year. It's like that's how simple this is, folks. But these people are going in with Suburbans and enclosed trailers and buying three or four shopping carts full of toilet paper because they don't think that they don't realize that toilet paper is actually made right here in the USA, that we can get the toilet paper anytime you want.
Right.
It's your Chinese products that you're going to have to worry about a shortage of. But don't worry about
right.
that. When you do finally get them, you'll have to pay about 10 times the value of what you're normally worth. So,
right.
Whatever.
Yeah, you know,
go ahead,
you used to buy
toilet
it was
paper.
On special, you know, three rolls for the price of one. Now it's one roll for the price of 10.
Because of morons in this country that have to hoard toilet paper. I don't even want you to try to explain it to me, Chris, because I'll probably just, you know, go off on another rant and that's just
you know what?
Anybody.
What was that phrase you hit me with earlier? You said you know a lot of shit, which, you know, I want that on my tombstone now. He knew a lot of shit.
Yeah.
But despite all the shit that I know, I still haven't come to grips and come up with any type of articulable explanation of what the hell the toilet paper shortages are really about. That one I can't explain.
This one gets me, man. You know how many hours of sleep I've lost sitting up at night thinking to myself, why toilet paper? Why? Why not canned goods? You know, why not canned food? Why toilet paper? Like anything you can hoard. I mean, okay, another example. Remember the East Coast, the pipeline, not too long ago. That happened under Biden also. But besides that fact, do you remember seeing pictures of people actually putting frickin' gasoline in garbage bags?
Yes.
Okay, so now
yes, I
now
do.
Let's let's fast forward to today or yesterday or a year ago. Now do you see why all these people are eating what the media says? They're eating it. They're taking it for, yep, this is life and death. You see people going into grocery stores, Costco's, Walmart's, with a contraption that they built with four wheels on it, and it looks like a portable shower, but it's not. It's just clear plastic all the way around them. They're inside that plastic thing with a face shield on, with wearing three masks and a hazmat suit, and basically are being followed by a posse of people with flamethrowers just in case they see the virus coming toward them. That's how the media has they fear-mongered people so badly and used their fear tactics that they've scared the literal shit, like literally, because they have to hoard toilet paper, out of the general population, that they really honestly believe that around every corner the virus is looming, and if I get it, I'm dead. The chances that die from this are not good.
And then you see people walking around, you know, in the makeshift hazmat suit with their gloves on and their face shield and their triple mask, and they have safety goggles, you know, and you look at them, you know, and they look so out of place. And you look at me like, you know, there's like a 99.96% survival rate for this virus, right? And they look at you in all this ridiculous garbage, like, you're brainwashed. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm the insane one.
Yep.
Got you.
Yep.
I know for people under 40, one of the statisticians I follow put it out there that, okay, if you are generally healthy and under the age of 40, your risk of dying from COVID complications is roughly the same as your odds of getting struck by lightning. And I want you to just put that in perspective. That's how much fear they've built up. You know, imagine if everyone ran around a grounding wire and a lightning rod attached to them via non-conductive material based upon the fear that they might get struck by lightning as they walk around through the store. You know, you would look at that and you'd say, okay, that's ridiculous. This person's obviously paranoid. But they have taken paranoia and dealing with threats in an extreme way, and they've actually made it mainstream, and not just made it mainstream, convince people that anyone who does not suffer from their level of paranoia is Adolf Hitler in the flesh. And that's, I don't know, it's literally...
Did you hear that the NIH came out today and admitted to gain a function... Hold on here. I'll get it right.
Gain of
Maybe
function.
I should go get some toilet paper. Yes, thank you. Gain of function research in Wuhan. They admitted to that. And now they're starting
they
to point
finally admitted
up.
It.
Yes, they admitted it. And now they're starting to point their fingers at Fauci. And we all knew this was going to come from day one. Fauci has been, you know, the front man. Oh, he's the top leading doctor, leading scientist, whatever. If you guys that are listening to this show would go back and research what else Dr. Fauci has been involved with throughout the years under previous administrations, including a study done in the Congo in 1998 involving remdesivir, where 35% of the patients died of kidney failure or major organ failure. If you knew what he was involved with the HIV, I know that there is some kind of a Disney documentary out there that exists that has Dr. Fauci's daughter on there, and she's talking about how people are mean to her dad, and he really just wants to help people. If you really read up on what he's been involved with and what he has pushed for, I can't find anywhere inside me where I want to agree with his daughter and say that your dad was trying to help people, when in fact he has known through numerous studies that some of the things that he's been pushing, especially this remdesivir, has been killing people. And that is what they were treating patients in the United States in hospitals that were being admitted to the hospital with COVID-19 symptoms, severe symptoms. They were treating with remdesivir. And a lot of those people were elderly. So you've seen a high number of, they called COVID deaths. But if you research those COVID deaths, a lot of those people died from kidney failure, renal failure, right, major organ failure, because of this remdesivir being involved in the cocktail that they were being treated with. And my question, and maybe you can answer this, Chris, is did the doctors not know about these previous studies, or were they just following what the CDC and the NIH and Dr. Fauci was telling them to do? This is our protocol. This is what we're doing. This is what we're treating them with. And if that's the case, why did one of those doctors at least research remdesivir and find out about the study in the Congo in 1998 where 35% of the test subjects died of kidney failure and say, I ain't giving my patient that? And then furthermore, why didn't they go and research Europe and India, where India has a way larger population than America does, and they've been treating their patients with, what do you think they've been treating their patients with, Chris? I'm going to let you answer this.
India?
Because I know you know the answer. Yep.
You're talking about horse dewormer, right?
Oh, my God, yes. God forbid you have that horse dewormer. But they have the lowest case of COVID-19.
Now, here's what's funny. You can assign, and this is what another little stunt that the media does. They call it horse dewormer. Well, yes. In fact, ivermectin is horse dewormer. So you can't gig them for saying something that's false, because that is a true statement. Ivermectin is used as a horse dewormer. However, at a different dosage, it's also an antiviral treatment in humans. And you can go on and on with this. It's not just ivermectin. You know what else they put in horses to treat certain viruses? Penicillin. Yeah, penicillin. You've probably been prescribed penicillin at some point in your life by a doctor. Does that mean you took horse medicine? Of course not. You know, a lot of us mammals have a lot of similar biology to us. So it's not crazy to think that a medication that works in a human body in different doses can also work in cats, dogs, horses, cows, because a lot of our biology is similar. We are all a part of that same class of mammals, the mammal kingdom. We're all part of the mammal kingdom. So to go and say that, I think the best one I saw out there, you know, Joe Rogan talked about how his doctor had prescribed him ivermectin as one part of his treatment when he had COVID. And, of course, Brian Stetler goes on CNN and says, oh, Joe Rogan's on the internet talking about people should take horse dewormer. Picture of Joe Rogan saying, I drink lots of water. And then it showed CNN breaking news and Brian Stetler saying, Joe Rogan says he's drinking engine coolant. You know, because, yeah, you know what? You do use water as an engine coolant. Once again, not a false statement, but completely misleading, because it is missing context. I know Facebook is really huge on tagging things that are missing context. It just seems like they miss a few things here and there when it comes to the mainstream media. But, yeah, that's what the media does. But people buy it. People buy it. It was just like when they talked about hydroxychloroquine being a fish tank cleaner. Okay. It's one of the ingredients in fish tank cleaner. No one said go out and drink a bottle of fish tank cleaner. And the media, when they do this, when they try to make people sound crazy by doing this, they're actually spreading their own form of disinformation. And I'm going to give credit where credit's due here. I am taking this from Tim Pool, who does the TimCast podcast. And he points this out. When CNN goes in and says Joe Rogan is taking horse dewormer to treat his COVID, and then they see that Joe Rogan is alive and well and didn't die from COVID, these people then might go out and grab, if they have access to veterinary supplies, they might grab the dose that's meant for horses and take it, thinking that that's what Joe Rogan took and he's fine. Why? Because the mainstream media completely misled them. So the media who likes to say we're all giving disinformation, anyone that disagrees with the Democrat narrative, they're actually putting out their own brand of misinformation, and it is dangerous and it is causing harm. As you might remember, the one, you know, couple when Trump talked about hydroxychloroquine and the media went on there and said, oh, that's a fish tank cleaner. And people said, well, you know, I believe Trump. And man, if this fish tank cleaner is working, we're going to take it to make sure we don't get this COVID stuff. And then they died from it. Well, imagine if CNN had been honest in their reporting and made the distinction between hydroxychloroquine, the human prescription drug, versus hydroxychloroquine as one ingredient of a commercial fish tank cleaner. Perhaps those people wouldn't have believed that fish tank cleaner was an acceptable treatment for COVID. So again, they're doing their own brand of misinformation. It is harmful, and it is causing injury and death.
But guess what, Chris? These same people that won't take ivermectin or hydrochloroquine based off of what the media tells them also go to McDonald's and eat the fries. And if they only knew that McDonald's refuses to take the potatoes that have those little brown spots on them, so what does Idaho farmers have to do in Idaho to get those brown spots out of that those potatoes? They use a certain kind of I can't remember, insecticide or pesticide or whatever the hell you want to call it. I'm not a smart man. It's just, I think it's called a pesticide. But it's so dangerous that they close the windows up in their homes and they do not touch or go into those fields for 5 days after they spray those potatoes. That's how harmful that whatever they spray on those potatoes. And I can't remember, I'd have to find the article. I don't have enough time to go look it up right now, but
but it kills the brown spots and makes the potatoes look
nice. Yeah, it's just a nice plain brown potato. But okay, so when they harvest them and they put them in these big bins where they have to get rid of that pesticide or whatever chemical that is that they put on these potatoes for, and I don't remember how many days they have to do that before they're able to take them out of that bin and actually ship them off. Do you honestly think that they're getting 100% of that, whatever chemical that is so harmful, out of those potatoes? And because McDonald's doesn't want to have a brown spot on a potato, when I go to the grocery store now and I want a sack of potatoes, I look for the ones with the brown spots because then I know at least they weren't treated for that shit that they're putting on it for McDonald's fries. So my point being is the same people that are believing the media about hydrochloroquine and ivermectin, you know, being this or being that, are also the same people eating the McDonald's fries that are covered with chemicals that will kill you. And it never ceases to amaze me that people don't branch out a little bit and not believe everything that they see on TV. And when they hear guys like me and you talking, they're like, oh, the conspiracy theorist here. Yeah, I've heard some of the stuff he said. He's nuts. Okay, well,
right.
We'll see about that.
Well, right. I mean, that's just like if you were to go out right now and start quoting some VAERS statistics, that's the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, VAERS, is a subsidiary, I believe, of the CDC, This is a program mm-hmm. that falls under CDC control. And I know how many people we have out there that worship the CDC. I don't want to offend the branch COVIDians. So the CDC oversees this. So if you're one of those people that believe the CDC, then you have to believe that the VAERS site is true, accurate, correct, and holy by all means. No one's reporting on those numbers. Last I looked, and this was old. This was as of September 24th was the latest update I saw that was being reported online from VAERS. We were just shy of 16,000. I believe it was 16,000.
Yes. And Chris, don't forget to mention that OSHA come out and stated that employers do not have to report any adverse side effects from these vaccines until at least May of 2022.
Right.
So if they're not willing to give you the truth, what in the hell is in these vaccines that they don't want you to know about?
Right. And you know what? There's like this massive push, this rush to get everybody to take it before all the data comes out. And I'm sorry, if you don't find that sketchy, I don't know what you would find sketchy.
Yeah, and wait till this data comes out. People are going to be pissed. What do they think is going to happen when these people find out that they've been being lied to for the last year and a half or 2 years?
Who knows? Will it even get reported? That's my question. Or will it be covered up by the media?
Well, everything else is getting being covered up right now. You really have to dig in multiple sources to find the true information. And even that information is skewed because the VAERS website, only one out of the 11 agencies that report to VAERS is reporting. So
right.
How many numbers are the other 10 agencies holding back? We're
right.
only getting, what did they say, 1 to 10% the last show we did, 1 to 10% of what the actual cases are
right.
are being reported. So, I mean, we're talking 16, millions 000, of numbers here, folks.
Yeah. 16,000 VAERS deaths is potentially 1.6 million people that have died. Obviously worse than COVID, which is probably what Trump meant when he said the cure can't be worse than the disease, even though I'm still skeptical of it. But I don't know. I think
right.
the biggest failure of our school system is that no one was ever taught in the school systems that the media, you want to get called a conspiracy theorist? Tell some of these branch COVIDians this and they'll laugh at you. The media is a for-profit entertainment industry.
Mm-hmm.
That is a true statement. There is absolutely nothing
proven,
untrue about that.
Proven by
and
the Smith-Bunch Modernization
yeah.
Act.
When you tell people who follow the media so closely that believe everything that television tells them, when you tell them that they laugh at you and call you a crazy conspiracy theorist, having no idea that in actuality, even in case law, where some news agencies have been sued, it's actually been ruled that, yeah, it's the media. They are an entertainment industry. And what they put out on television can't be construed as absolute, complete fact, that it has to be taken as entertainment designed to entertain their target audience. So they're not. And I remember when I was in school, you were taught that the news was a reliable source of information. No one ever came in and said, hey, you know, these people reporting the news, they're making money off of that, and they report it in a way that makes them money. And you need to be skeptical of what they're telling you, because what they're telling you is not necessarily true, accurate, or the complete story. But that didn't get done. And we're seeing that now, and I have to give credit to my grandmother here, my late grandmother. I remember one time her walking in and the TV was on. I don't even remember what show was on at the time, but I remember her shaking her head and she was looking at the TV. She's like, that thing is going to be the downfall of Western civilization. And man, was she spot on. She was right up there with you know, with Orwell in calling that one. Because, man, we're really seeing that this year. I never realized how many people took orders from their television set until this last year.
No, I've seen the same thing. And unfortunately, it's you know, people that are very close to me that I love deeply. And I sometimes lose my patience with them, and I get frustrated. And I raise my – I'm the kind of guy that raises my voice when I get frustrated. And – it sounds like I'm yelling at you, but I'm not yelling at you. I'm just frustrated.
Well, it's because you're a domestic terrorist.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. I mean, so there's my reason for that. So hold me accountable. No. you know, we got a couple minutes left here, and I wanted to bring up the fact that I created a Facebook group for us tonight, so you guys can go and follow the Facebook group. It's called the Disrespected Trucker Radio Show. You know, how original. Go on the Facebook group if you follow Facebook, and I am going to start posting every episode that we do, and I'm going to also label every episode as episode one, episode two, so on and so forth, so we can come back or direct you back to a certain episode where we talked about a certain thing. As time goes on and we become more popular, we do hope to get leading people, doctors, scientists, truckers, anybody that we feel is pertinent to the conversation, get them on as a guest and let them talk for a while and ask them the questions, the tough questions, and let you hear the truth. We've grown quite nicely in just the five episodes. This is our fifth. In just five episodes, 5 weeks. We went, you know, from, you know, 10 or 20 listeners to a couple hundred and a couple thousand at some cases. So some weeks are better than others. We get a lot of callers. Like last week, we had callers. Man, did we have callers. And that's great. We strongly encourage that because that gives our listeners a different perspective and a different point of view. And when you call into the show, we'll put you on the air, whether you agree with us or disagree with us. And you talk about what you want to talk about. It doesn't have to be what we're talking about. And let's have a conversation about the subject matter that you want to talk about. Because after all, just because we call it the Disrespected Trucker Radio Show doesn't mean that it's all about me and Chris Mikerson. It's about all of you. And we want to keep the show interesting to our listeners. So next week, every Thursday from 7 o'clock to 9 o'clock p.m. Central, we will be on the air. We encourage everybody to put in speed dial 516-387-1733 and then press that 1 button. Chris, what do you want to say with the 1 minute that we have left of the show?
Oh, boy. What do I say? You know, folks, it's time to come together. It's time to start questioning what you're being told. I think there's enough information out there. There's enough things being exposed that you've got to start questioning at least some of the narrative you've been told. We're going on 2 years now of authoritarian rule, and it's pretty clear to see that the division between us is most definitely being pushed. And that comes from the old adage of divide and conquer. Well, if us is the people they are dividing, who do you suppose it is they wish to conquer once we're divided? And I'm just going to leave the audience with that.
Remember, 10 days to flatten a curve to 2 years and get vaccinated. Have a great night, and we'll see you next Thursday.